This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. Bill Russell, of course, is with me, and we are with Stuart Kaufman, who, among other things, is the founding general partner of the BIOS Group that is to be found here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Please take me back to these basic challenges that you are posing. You are telling me that Darwin wrote about the origin of species, not about the origin of life. You are telling me that this fundamental myth that is science is something that we may need to think about anew.
Oh, I think science is not a myth. Science is the most reliable way we have to find out how the world works. But what I may have stumbled across, Paula, is a limitation in the way we do science, and maybe a fundamental limitation. So there's many ways into what's in investigations, and I may as well take us straight to what that puzzle is and try to explain it. It'll take a few moments. Let me begin with the following. I'm going to tell you about statistical mechanics. So, last time
you did this, it did not hurt, so I will give some comfort to those listening that this is not painful.
It's not painful, particularly because I'm not a physicist, so this is a biologist's version of statistical mechanics. You can hear the physics envy in it, though. So imagine that you have a liter box. It's an isolated thermodynamic system. So we want it sitting out, say, somewhere in space at constant temperature. No matter and no energy can enter the box. And it's got n particles of perfectly elastic little gas balls bumping into one another. Now, we know what the liter box looks like. It's got a certain length per side, and it's a cube. And we know where it's located. Now, we can measure the position of each of our gas molecules with respect to the three axes provided by the three sides. So you just project the position on the x-axis, the y-axis, and the z-axis, and that takes three numbers to specify the position. Meanwhile, the particle's moving in some direction, so we can specify its velocity, or if you will, mass times velocity in each direction, which is momentum. So three more numbers will specify the momentum in each direction. And then there are n particles in the box, so each particle takes six numbers, three for position, three for momentum, and we need six n numbers to specify the positions and the momenta of all of the particles at once. So the mathematicians and physicists talk about a 6n dimensional classical phase space. And what you're supposed to picture is that for any configuration of the gas, it corresponds to where configuration means right now the positions and the momenta of all of the gas particles, that corresponds to one point in a 6n dimensional phase space. Okay. Now, the next thing is that, and this is the absolutely essential step, you can specify ahead of time all possible combinations of positions and momenta of the particles in the box. That is to say, you can specify ahead of time the entire configuration or phase space for the particles in the box. Now the rest of statistical mechanics develops from that, but I want you to get the core sense that you can say ahead of time what all the possibilities are.
Got it.
Okay, now.
Which is one of the things that we value about science is the ability to predict.
Yeah, that's right. And prediction has historically been tied to the capacity to say ahead of time what all of the possibilities are. And I want to make us understand that. Now, the rest of the way that statistical mechanics develops is you take the 6n dimensional phase space mathematically and you divide it up into a lot of little boxes, each of them 6n dimensional. And then some of those boxes correspond to all of the molecules being in the upper left-hand corner of our little liter box. And other boxes correspond to the molecules being more or less uniformly distributed. And it turns out there's a lot more of these little boxes in the 6n dimensional phase space where the molecules are more or less uniformly distributed than those where they're distributed in some weird way. And the second law of thermodynamics is nothing but the statement that over time the system tends to occupy states that are typical. And typical is equilibrium is the molecules are spread out uniformly in space, and there's an average kinetic energy, hence temperature, and an average pressure, that is a momentum transfer to the walls of the box. Now, let's go back It all started with our being able to say ahead of time what the phase space was. I'll give you another example. I'm going to give you a coin. I'll tell you it's a fair coin, and you're going to flip it 1,000 times. And you can tell me ahead of time all the possible outcomes, all heads, all tails, one head, the rest tails, and so on. You can specify the whole phase space. And notice that the probabilistic interpretation, the frequency interpretation of probabilities, like for flipping coins or dice, is based on knowing the entire set of possibilities ahead of time. Okay, now I'm skipping over much of what investigations is about to get to this point that comes near the end, but that's okay. We can cut through it any way we want. Darwin talked about something called adaptations, and then he talked about pre-adaptations. So let's talk about first an adaptation. Let's talk about Darwin's notion of the function of your heart. And Darwin would tell us something of the following kind. He would say the function of the heart is to pump blood. And what he means by that is it's a good thing to have a heart pumping blood. If you don't, you're dead. It's true. I'm a doctor. And
you can specify that.
Everybody who's walked into my practice, anytime I was somewhere practicing medicine who had a heart that wasn't pumping blood for very long, was dead. It's true. And Darwin's right. That is to say, Darwin's saying that the causal consequence of your heart, for virtue of which it was selected, is pumping blood. That if you have something that pumps blood, you're more likely to have kids than if you don't. And he has a perfectly fine account in terms of increased fitness and more propensity to have children. Now, your heart has other causal consequences. It makes heart sounds. Your heart goes lub-dub. So I'm a doctor and I know it goes lub-dub. Okay? In French it doesn't, but in English it does. Now, heart sounds are very useful for docs to listen to your heart and listen to heart sounds and all those other things. But making heart sounds is not the function of your heart. So that immediately tells, that is how your heart wasn't selected to make heart sounds. So that immediately tells us that the function of your heart is a subset of the causal consequences of your heart. Okay, we're going to need that later. But meanwhile, notice that it means that there is an inalienable holism in organisms making a living in an environment. To know the function of a part of an organism, you need to know the role that it plays for that organism in that environment.
Pumping blood, not going lub-dub.
Not going lub-dub, right. So, tough luck, there is this kind of holism that's just native to biology. You have to understand why. Now, I'll come back later and make use of that because I'm going to talk about autonomous agents, and we're getting into investigations backwards to get to this end point, but let me get to it now. Darwin also talked about pre-adaptations, and what he meant was that there were causal consequences of a part of an organism that were not functionally significant in the normal environment, but might happen to be functionally significant in an unusual environment. So I'm going to make Bill the hero of the story, and I hope this is okay with you, Bill. And I hope it's okay with you, Paul.
It'll be okay.
I hope it's okay with the listeners.
It'll be okay.
Because it's an appallingly sexist story. And
it's my only chance to be a hero, so I'll take it.
Well, you know that if you yell at a piano, you can make the piano ring because the piano is a resonant chamber. Hearts are hollow vessels, therefore they also are resonant chambers. Let's imagine that Bill has a mutant heart that just happens to be able to pick up earthquake pre-tremors. And he is in Los Angeles, and he is on Wilshire Boulevard, and he feels something funny in his chest, and he says, "Oh, goodness gracious, me alive," or words to that effect. An earthquake is coming, and he does whatever the right thing is. I don't know how you do that on Wilshire Boulevard, but let's suppose that you can. And Bill survives, and the sad part of the story is that hundreds of thousands of people die for thousands of square miles all around. It's a really bad earthquake.
And he was right.
And he was right. And word gets out about Bill and his earthquake-detecting heart. And now this is essential to my story, so you'll have to bear with me. Women flock to his side, seeking to mate with him. So Bill mates with many, as he's called upon to do under these circumstances.
Absolutely.
And as it happens, he has a simple Mendelian dominant. Namely, he has a mutant heart, such that all of his offspring have the same heart. Now, if it were the case that earthquakes happened often enough for that really to be of selective advantage, which is false, but suppose that it were true, then pretty soon there'd be a subspecies of the human species with earthquake detectors in their hearts. Okay, Belensis would be, you know, Homo sapiens sapiens Belensis. Okay, you'd be running around.
Can I interrupt you yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm at my crux point. Can I?
Well, no, you may have it. Go for it.
Thanks, Paula. Okay, so now here's the point. This is a Darwinian pre-adaptation, or what Steve Gould calls an exaptation. Here's the puzzle. Do you think you could say ahead of time all of the possible causal consequences of bits and pieces of organisms that might turn out to be adaptations in some funny environment? Let me say it again in a slightly more provocative way. Could you finitely pre-state all of the context-dependent causal consequences of parts of organisms in their environments that might become adaptations, that might be Darwinian pre-adaptations?
And the answer is probably not.
You see, I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
Now, it's important that I don't know how to prove it, although I've got some arguments in favor of it, but I think it's fundamentally important that the answer is no. We can't state it ahead of time. Now, let's just pause and think what that means. We could say ahead of time all possible positions and momenta of the particles in the box. We could finitely pre-state the configuration space of the box of molecules. But we cannot finitely pre-state the configuration space of the biosphere and all of the things that will come into existence. Now, if we cannot, we face a radical kind of ignorance that is not encompassed by the way we've been taught to do science. But the next thing I want you to notice, and then I'll let you get in your statement, Paul. The next thing I want you to notice is even though we can't state anything about it ahead of time, or very little about it ahead of time, that is not slowing down biological evolution one zitty-zot. Biological exaptations, biological pre-adaptations happen all the time. That's how all of the major and probably most or all of the minor adaptations happen. So the biosphere is getting on with being creative. I emphasize creative. Namely, it is doing things that we cannot say ahead of time. And I think that that is absolutely staggering. I think it's true. And I think it is a limit to the way the physicists, God bless them, have taught us how to do science.
And this is Stuart Kaufman. He has a right to say these things. He's going to say a great deal more when we return in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. Please be with us.